Welcome to WGMC at 50, a historical podcast series reflecting back on the five decades that WGMC Jazz 90.1 has been on the air in Rochester. WGMC 90.1 FM signed on for the very first time on November 1st, 1973.
We now commence with our first day of broadcast.
I'm Rob Linton, station manager of Jazz 90.1, and I've spent the past few months talking with WGMCers, past and present, and those who have had a hand in getting this radio station to where it is today, again, celebrating our 50th golden anniversary.
Welcome to the first broadcast by the Monroe Educational Radio Association Network.
We'd like to thank everybody who has participated in this series so far, and we invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy an oral history of WGMC. At 50. You are listening to WGMC at 50. I'm honored to be joined by a former WGMCer from all the way back in the 1980s and current general manager of WDCB in Chicago, Dan Binder. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks so much for the invite. Glad to be a part of WGMC's 50th. That's kind of cool.
So looking back at your history, and you've got a lot of history, not only in radio, but in jazz radio, if you could take us back to how you initially, first of all, when you were involved with GMC and how you became involved with this radio station.
You know, I was at WGMC from roughly somewhere in 1992 to 1995. I don't recall the exact dates, but it was those years, that time period. I had started out at WBSU, the student station at SUNY Brockport, and did sports there and did all kinds of different music shows, and eventually found my way to the jazz program there and fell in love with jazz partly just by pulling records off the shelf in the library at the station, and got way deep into it and just fell in love with jazz in particular, but big blues nut as well. And I started working in 1989 while I was still attending Brockport at WXXI. I became sort of one of their overnight. I did two overnights a week. And Jim McGrath, who was there for many years, a great overnight person, I was a listener of his and felt very lucky to get involved there and became part of the overnight thing a couple nights a week. And then I was a fill-in. And somewhere along around 1992, while I was still working at WXXI, and that was sort of just a part-time thing. It wasn't enough to base a whole full-time salary on. An opening came up at WGMC, and I can't remember if I did the midday shift first and then the afternoon shift, but for that three-year run, I was 10 to 2 part of the time. I think that was at the start, and then 2 to 7 for part of the time.
So going back to when you were in college at Brockport, was it your plan originally to get into broadcasting at that point, or did your experience with BSU, the college station, kind of fuel that? Talk about that if you could.
Definitely the experience at the college station fueled it. You know, I mean, I was a radio nut as a little kid, like a lot of us that ended up in this medium, you know, listening to the radio under the covers at night and listening to distant AM stations on my radio, you know, back in the 70s, long before I would have thought of any of this. And so I always loved the medium and just loved that idea of the intimacy of talking one-on-one. And then I was a music nut too. I was kind of a record collector from the time I was a little kid. And so somewhere along the line at Brockport, I was a communications major. I wasn't a broadcasting major, but once I got hooked in at the radio station, there was a whole crew of, you know, unique and interesting people that worked at the radio station as students that all worked together, and we all kind of learned from each other. And at the same time, between the radio skills and the music, it all kind of fueled itself. And by the time I was wrapping up college, that is what I wanted to do. I didn't know if I'd be able to make a career of it, but it was definitely what I wanted to do.
So going back to kind of that same time period or so, you had said that you kind of fell in love with jazz. Was, you know, were you raised with it at all? Did you have any experience growing up, or did that love kind of just happen as you discovered the music in the library?
You know, it just kind of happened for me. I think really my pathway into jazz was through blues. I started getting into soul music and blues when I was in high school. And I had a friend who was taking guitar lessons. If I'm not mistaken, he was taking guitar lessons with Chet Catello. And this would have been back, you know, in the early 80s, 1983, somewhere around in there. And he had told my friend to listen to B.B. King's records. So we would listen to B.B. King's records and shoot pool in my friend's basement and hang out and do that. And I just got very into B.B. King. I loved the sound of his guitar. I loved the sound of his band. And when I went to see him live, he would play in Rochester at what used to be called the Renaissance Theater, or I think he did the old festival tent a few times. And his band would open up with instrumentals like a lot of bands do before Star Time would come around, and they'd play typically three instrumentals, and they would be jazz type tunes with one of his band members leaning on the Hammond B3 and another guy playing these beautiful jazzy sophisticated blues lines on guitar. And I loved that sound, and you know, so that really helped to fuel it. My dad had actually been a jazz fan way back in the 1950s, but didn't keep it up. I mean, he was just like a lot of our parents, I guess, of that era. They didn't really have time to invest in a music collection or thinking about it and doing it. My dad owned a pharmacy in the South Wedge for many years and, you know, was an independent businessman. Just didn't have time for it. But I came to find out later that, you know, he saw Miles Davis and Dave Brubeck on a double bill at the Blackhawk back in the 1950s when he was in the Army and stationed in San Francisco. And then you look back and you find that it's a Miles Davis album recorded at the Black Hawk, and it's this great historic place. So there were some seeds there that I didn't really know about, but I can't say I heard a lot of jazz in the house. Probably the closest I heard to it from my parents would have been hearing a weekly Frank Sinatra show on the radio, which I liked too. I didn't really quite know it at the time, and later became a huge Sinatra fan too.
So with having such early experience here at GMC and Jazz 90.1 back in the early 1990s, certainly it was a much different radio station then than it is today. And obviously you haven't been as involved over the, you know, recent years, but you have watched from a distance being in the jazz radio biz yourself. Talk a little bit about what it was like at that very grassroots radio station back in the 1990s.
Well, you know, I think everybody was there that was there in the daytime, and the volunteers, much like probably what you have now, were all dedicated people that really, I think there was always kind of, even back in the 90s, a pretty professional sound to it during the daytime. Julie Hall, I think, was the morning host back then, and she had a wonderful voice for radio and sounded great. And Eric Gruner was already a radio pro, was running the station. And I had heard him. I remember listening to Eric Gruner when I was doing a paper route back in the 80s, you know, as a kid, hearing him on WCMF or some of the other Rochester stations that he was on. So, you know, there was certainly a strong element of professionalism and trying to put out something that was real strong. And then great volunteers like Derek Lucas, who was already doing, I guess it was the Sunday Night Spectrum show, which has continued in various forms for many years, and Gary O on Friday nights that came in. I used to enjoy talking to him. There were a lot of great people, as there still are, and Tom Pethick. I mean, he was one of the people I remember listening to when I was still in college. I would listen to his program, and I can even remember his promo because it had Jimmy Smith and Wes Montgomery, the song James and Wes, and I was captivated by the music, background music on his 30-second promo, and had to seek out the tune back then.
So there's not a lot of people around the country and really around the world that can understand the challenges of supporting jazz in the radio like you and I can. You're running a public, you know, jazz station in Chicago. We're doing the same thing here in Rochester. Not many of us left. Starting out as a DJ and then ending up in a managerial role, talk to us a little bit about kind of what are the challenges that you're seeing with keeping jazz in the radio on your side?
You know, I'm very fortunate to be in the Chicago market, you know, that there's such an incredible jazz scene here. And, you know, Rochester has a great jazz history, and I've always been proud of that and like to reach back and dabble in that even when I'm on radio here. But, you know, Chicago has a great jazz scene, so that helps a lot. There's a very vital scene right now where you can go out 7 nights a week and have multiple choices for really high-level music on a constant basis. And that helps us, but we've really leaned hard into, as a radio station at WDCB, into supporting the local scene and being a part of that whole thing where we're trying to do everything we can to help support all of the great local artists and to keep reflecting the history of the local area. At the same time, you know, I've worked for about 10 years for WBEZ, big NPR station in Chicago, who used to have jazz, no longer has it. That's been a story at a lot of the stations that used to be maybe a little more powerful, but have split formats that had jazz. And a lot of that went away. And part of it is that jazz, you know, you have to be willing. And I know that you and Derek Lucas do this at WGMC. You guys are warriors. You know, you're out there all the time during the jazz festival, out there on Jazz Street. You're doing events constantly. It's a real hustle. And I think if you don't have that drive, it's not going to work, because a jazz radio station, just the nature of it right now in 2024, you've got to be kind of lean as far as your staffing. If you have grandiose ambitions of building a giant staff and having tons of financial backing, that might not be realistic. You have to make do with what you have. I have, even for a station in Chicago, we have a staff of about 12 professional people, the backing, you know, the office staff as well as the on-air staff, and then a lot of people who are volunteers that do programs for us, just like you do at WGMC. And really, it's been exciting to see how far you guys have come over the years. You've got an incredible station there in Rochester. Rochester deserves to have a great station, and I think you've done a great job with it.
Well, thank you very much. And you're doing a wonderful job out at your station as well. And we're all doing our best to keep the jazz flame lit. And my last question for you is, you know, again, being here for kind of a shorter period of time in the 1990s, but watching from a distance, what is it like for you to see this radio station surpass 5 decades on the radio, largely with most of it, the jazz format?
I'm really happy to see it. I think it's a great thing. I'm just so glad that you guys have done so well and that there's been this common thread. I mean, the format has definitely changed at various times over the years, but I think during the time period when I was there, it was combination, some straight ahead jazz. There was still quite a bit of what was, you know, called smooth jazz at that time that was a part of the format back in the 90s. And then they were also coming out of what used to be called the NAC format, New Adult Contemporary. So it was kind of this mishmash, but it all sort of worked. And the jazz thread really stayed strong, because I think people that love jazz are pretty loyal to the format. They're willing to support it. And they understand that if you love jazz music, you do have to support the institutions that we have, whether that's educational institutions or nightclubs, venues that present the music, or radio stations that put it out there. And, you know, I think WGMC has done a great job of being in a similar role to what we try to do at my station in Chicago, and that is to be this sort of center point for the jazz community, where people can connect and listen to the music, get a deeper understanding if they're new to it, explore different aspects of the genre, all those things, and then have that great local connection with live performers and working musicians and the big festival that happens every year. I think it all comes together that way nicely.
Well, Dan, thank you very much again for taking the time to chat. I know you're busy out at your station, and hopefully we can get you to Rochester pretty soon, maybe even during Jazz Fest time.
I still have family and friends in town. Love coming back to Rochester a few times a year, so look forward to getting. I don't know if I'll get back for the festival this year, but I'm hoping to for at least a day or two of the fest.
Sounds good. We look forward to seeing you. Thank you again, Dan.
Thank you so much, Rob.
Thank you for checking out this episode as part of WGMC at 50, the podcast series celebrating five decades of Jazz 90.1 WGMC. Be sure to check back often as we plan to upload new episodes every week or two, celebrating those folks who have come through our doors, making this great radio station what it is today. Also, don't forget to check out our website. Our 50th anniversary page is loaded full of historical pictures, articles, audio, video, and so much more. This is Jazz 90.1 WGMC station manager Rob Linton. Thank you again so much for tuning in.